Rabbit Hole Happy Hour. This is episode 21. We're glad you're still with us. I'm Mallory.
I'm Ashley.
And we have a very special guest today. Her name is my sister.
That's my sister.
This is Abby, everybody. Say hello.
Hello, I'm Abby.
She is 4 years younger than me, and she comes to us from her own podcast called Fringe Theory. So check them out for sure. And I'm sure after this episode, you'll be converted. So
maybe, unless I make a fool of myself, yeah. Which is possible. So
this is the first time we're recording remotely, so it's a little sketchy. Also pretty fun.
Yeah.
So guys, what's up? What's going on in Asheville? What are you guys doing?
We have been doing a whole lot of nothing. Yeah. Abby worked last night.
Yeah, Mallory just sat and listened to me talk to people on the phone.
Yeah.
For hours.
It stressed me out because her job, it's people calling for their pets having gotten into something that could potentially kill them. Mm-hmm. And then Abby has to be like, oh, you have to pay blah, blah, blah.
I know, it sucks. Yeah, that's the worst
part. And then let me put you on hold while your animal is dying behind you.
I would just send them straight to the vet and we would not be talking on the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Abby have a phone voice?
She does.
I have a major phone
mega
voice.
Phone voice. Yeah. Very professional.
Oh, thank you, Mallory.
Wow. It was good. Other than that, we grilled out today.
We had some cone.
We did. We had grilled cone and Beyond Burgers. What have you been up to, Ashley?
Well, not a lot. I was sick for a while. Yeah. Tudor went out of town, so I was sick and struggling with Adrian. Went back to Orange Theory for those who follow our Orange Theory journey, mm-hmm. and it was very difficult.
I did too.
And I was sore for so long.
Yep. Same here.
But other than that, nothing much. Just preparing for this episode. Should we get to the questions? We asked you guys to ask us some questions.
Yes, I can't wait to hear what they are.
We had a few repeat question askers, or whatever you want to call them, which is totally fine. At Mujer Inutil, I mispronounced it last time, but I looked it up. It's Spanish for useless woman.
Amazing.
So she asks, what are your favorite cases that you haven't covered yet?
Oh, that we haven't covered yet. Oh, man. I think I pulled out all my favorites already. There's one that I love that I did actually do, and we scrapped it because I didn't think it was interesting enough, and that was The Somerton Man.
The Somerton Man?
Yeah. So it's basically this guy washed up on a beach, or I don't know if he washed up or was just like found, he was just found on a beach in Australia in I think it was the 40s, but they found a bunch of weird stuff on him, like his clothes had somebody else's name, like different names on them, and he had like a ripped out piece of paper that was from a book of poetry that just said Tamam Shud, which means the end, or it is the end, or something like that.
What?
And then nobody could identify him at all. Like, he was just came from nowhere. So,
but did you hear that they found out who it was?
I knew that they were
I think I sent you something.
Yeah, yes. I don't remember if they actually identified him or they were working on it.
Or they were like speculating about who it could be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about you, Abby?
I'm going to be honest, I haven't really been keeping up with a lot of stuff recently. but one thing that I guess this is kind of old news, so everyone probably already knows about this, but I was really into watching The Staircase recently.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That is so... Yes.
I was late to the game, but I watched it, and I was just, like, obsessed with it, trying to figure out if I believed him or not. Is he innocent or what? And I haven't watched the new show yet, The Staircase.
Oh, you should. It's
really
so good.
Yeah, okay. I've heard good things about it, but that's one that I've liked.
Are there any cults that you really want to cover? On Fringe Theory, she mainly sticks to cults.
I'm going to butcher this name, but I've wanted to do Shinrikyo, the Japanese cult. I think they're the ones that had that, like, bombing or something.
I don't think I've ever heard of it.
That was actually a pretty big one, I think.
Oh my god, do it.
Yeah. I haven't done it yet, obviously, but I don't know. There are a lot of ones out there that I should look into. Yeah. If anybody has any ideas, let Mallory and Ashley know, or you can let me know. Just, also,
yeah, go check out their podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to their Instagram and comment on their Instagram.
Yeah.
What about you, Ashley?
Well, for me, I really like corn.
It's corn.
I'll tell you all about it.
I think for me, it would have to be Chris Watts.
Yeah.
It's just insane. It's just so heartbreaking and insane that this man who seemed completely normal did such a disgusting thing and then went on the news and lied in front of police and neighbors. Yes. And
it's another one of those people that go on the news. Like, he was being interviewed for another reason, but still, if you have the stamina to go on the news after somebody that you know and love has died, especially if you are fucking guilty.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What kind of a person are you?
Jesus Christ.
It's insane to me.
And their family seemed so normal. Like, I know. Such a normal family. You just wouldn't have guessed it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Another one is, we talked about both of these last episode, I think, but the Stephen McDaniel one.
Ooh,
where
you guys should cover that one.
Yeah, it's
I got chills.
Mallory showed me that a while ago, and that, like, has stuck with me.
Insane.
The interrogation.
Yeah, the interrogation.
Interrogation. Ugh.
God, he's so crazy.
They're totally insane. Oh, my God.
Life of Spite asks, what are your favorite personality tests and what types are you both? I know you're probably not the type to take a personality test.
Well, I did a quick one while I was sitting there waiting for this to start. And guess what? An assessment fee is required for a cutting edge personality test. I did the whole test and it said that I had to fucking pay for it.
Oh, that is just not cool.
It did give me like a little bit of a blurb. So, and it's like has a little lock. It cuts it off. So this is all that I get to know. Your personality types are like social chameleons who reflect the energy and vibe of others. You do this because you're easygoing and love to make people feel comfortable by avoiding conflict with them. And that's all.
Oh, that sounds accurate.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Well, I'm all about this shit, so I think my favorite personality test would be the Myers-Briggs, and I'm an INFJ, which means, I don't remember exactly, but it means I'm introverted. It's like, the I is introverted, the F is feeling, I don't know. Guys, you tell me. I'm an INFJ. I also took the Enneagram, and I'm a 4-wing-5, which, again,
I don't even know.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
You guys should take it, though. It's really interesting. Those who know will know.
Yeah, true. Somebody asked about our zodiac.
Oh, the big three.
Yeah, the big three. And I had to look that up last night, too.
Yeah, the same way.
I did not know.
I know Ashley's into that, but I'm I'm technically a Leo, which is, like, not me at all. Not my personality.
Well, we need to find out what your big three moon sign and rising sign is.
I can't remember. Because I feel like somebody's told me before and I just don't remember. But I am on the very last day of Leo as well.
Oh, so maybe you're Virgo.
Yeah, Virgo.
At Sion, sorry if I mispronounce your name. At Sion Williamson 95, she says, not a question, but found your podcast this week and love it. Listening from Belfast in Ireland.
Oh, hi. That's so cool.
That's so cool. Ireland.
Ireland.
That's,
I'm sure I'm doing it wrong.
I've never been there, but I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, me too. Oh my God, I want to go here.
It's really pretty.
So we have several questions from this person. At KL Mitches asks, what did you study in school?
Art, and then I turned to biology, but I never even finished my degree, so.
I went to school for veterinary technology, which is basically nursing school for animals. I am a registered nurse for animals.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, school.
It's very fun. It's definitely an interesting field, and I'm currently working for, like, a poison control hotline for animals.
Thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
I went to art school. Mallory was in the same classes as me.
Yeah, that's where we, well, it's not where we met, but we met because of people that we knew each other from. Oh, that was a worse sentence. Anyway.
We had photography together, which was a blast, but my focus was graphic design and I had a minor in marketing. So.
I didn't know that.
I had to go to the business building and hang out with all the North Face jackets and all those people.
That sounds nice. Very fun.
Okay, guys, favorite Halloween costume you've ever had?
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Now I gotta remember my Halloween costumes.
I was a green M&M 1 year.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
Ooh, sexy.
I was a child.
When she was a kid. Oh.
That's the one with breasts and, like, long that, legs. Yes.
God damn, what did I dress up as? I'm trying to think of what I dressed up as at our Halloween parties that we used to have every year, too.
What about when you were a vampire, but you had your teeth specially made?
Yeah. I didn't have them specially made. I fucking specially made them.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I used to be a dental assistant, and so I took our crown, our temporary crown material, and made myself custom vampire fangs.
Amazing.
It was awesome.
And she still wears them to this day everywhere she goes.
I lost them a long time ago.
Right now.
Yeah, that probably was my favorite thing to do. That was fun to make those.
I think mine was probably when I was Uma Thurman from Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. Was that the same year as your teeth?
It might have been. Because that was the year that Tudor was Pokey.
Yeah.
The horse. And then there was that picture of him in the costume and then you could see his face through the mesh. And it was really funny.
Yes. And Abby, remember when your friend E.G. was a baby and she wore an actual baby diaper?
Oh my god, I forgot.
I do remember that.
It wasn't even an adult diaper. It was a baby diaper.
Oh my god. I do remember Amazing. That. Amazing. That is hilarious.
Okay. Least favorite fashion trend that's coming back.
Oh,
I gotta say, for me, it's gotta be low-rise jeans. That's not cute.
Yeah, I do not.
At this age range that we're in right now, that's not cute.
No, it's not. It doesn't work. I feel like I'm so out of touch. I don't even know what's in
honestly,
fashion.
Me too. I'm not a big fan of, like, the flare jeans either. I feel like that's kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's coming back for sure.
I wonder if they'll bring back layering tanks.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
I hope not.
Mallory vests are back.
I was about to say that, actually.
So they are actually back. Like, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay, this question is great for you guys. Any random hobbies?
I have a lot of hobbies, actually. Let's see. Knitting, rug tufting.
Rug tufting.
Yeah.
I did not know this was a hobby of yours.
I have all the shit at my house. I did cross stitching for a little while. Calligraphy, I did that for a little while. I haven't picked up the calligraphy pen in a little bit, but
Mallory's the queen of
microscopes.
Hobbies.
I got a microscope for Christmas 1 year so I could look at shit that
tardigrades.
Yeah, I found some tardigrades. It was really cool. Tardigrades and rotifers, a lot of ciliates. Anyway, what else?
You draw.
Drawing.
You paint.
Painting.
Fucking do everything, bitch.
Did a little dabbled in gardening. Yeah, I intensely cling on to one hobby for like a few months and then I leave it behind.
It's called ADD.
Look at that. I know. I have indeed been diagnosed with ADD.
What about you, Abby?
I would say that my hobbies are typically things like reading, gardening, and taking care of animals, I guess. Having
That's
like a
precious.
Million animals around my home.
Yeah.
So
I love
basically I just have like awesome. A jungle home with that's my goal is to have a jungle home with lots of books.
Well, you lost your African snail.
Yeah, that was a long time ago and I don't think it was actually an African snail. I think that they gypped whoever bought
that. No way, really?
I don't think so. That thing was small compared to a fucking...
Well, it never got the chance to live, Abby.
What?
She killed it.
I didn't kill it. They're hard to take care of. And also, I think that they're just not meant to be in a home either.
I think
that it's probably
I
not supposed
totally
to
agree
be.
With that.
So, yeah, it was not good. I feel very bad about that.
I think my hobbies are... Well, my biggest hobby is this podcast. I am kind of obsessed with it. Probably annoy Mallory a lot.
No, you do not.
Other than that, I love houseplants. I have lots of houseplants that I take care of.
I love houseplants so much. I just want to fill my entire house.
I just got into reading more. I just bought a Kindle.
Oh, nice.
So I think this podcast is what's gotten me back into reading, which is awesome. I used to be really into music, and I used to make a lot of like playlists, themed playlists for stuff, but I don't do that so much anymore. What else do I do?
You take care of a child.
Right. My hobby is trying to keep somebody alive on the regular.
Yeah, that will do it.
I'm tired.
Yeah. Oh my God.
My hobby is staying awake every day. But that's all the questions we have.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Those were fun. Yeah, those were fun ones. Thank you guys.
Thank you guys. All right. Well, do you guys have anything else to say, or should I just get into my story?
I think you should just get into it.
Just jump right on in, baby.
Okay. I will.
I will.
All right.
Oh, did you want to talk about the drink?
Oh, shit. Yes. The drink of the night is called The Doctor, and you'll understand why momentarily, but it is 2 ounces Swedish Punch, which is, I don't know what the fuck it is, but I had to drive an hour to get it. It was really stupid.
Mallory told me about that.
Actually, I have it written here. It's Batavia Arak. I don't know what that is, but rum and sugar and spices mixed together. I guess it's popular in Sweden. And then it's 1/2 ounce Jamaican rum and then 1/2 ounce freshly squeezed lime juice. And it is strong, guys.
Yes, it is.
Okay, here we go. Imagine a world where any injured or diseased organ or body part could simply be replaced with an artificial one that was made in a lab just for you.
I'd be out of a job.
You would.
Yeah.
A world where we're no longer at the mercy of donor organs, which are in short supply. This branch of medicine is called regenerative medicine, and it involves the generation and use of therapeutic stem cells, tissue engineering, and the production of artificial organs. In 2011, Dr. Paolo Macchiarini, a world-renowned thoracic surgeon, was making leaps and bounds in this particular field of medicine. He was researching artificial tracheas, or windpipes, and had been working on a trachea made of plastic, 3D printed, and then infused with the patient's stem cells. This solution seemed to solve 2 problems. 1, the issue of organ rejection, and 2, lack of donor organs. Paolo Macchiarini at this time was working at the notable Karolinska Institute in Sweden. This was the institution responsible for handing out the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. News of this miraculous development spread through the medical community, but many peers of Paolo's were hesitant about his claims and feared he was jumping the gun, performing surgeries before there was enough research to back them. But experimental medicine is a risky field, and the consensus was, if we're going to make progress, we have to take risks. A man from Eritrea named Andamariam Teklesnabet Bayen was earning his master's degree in Iceland when he found out he had cancer. A golf ball-sized tumor had grown and was obstructing his windpipe. He had received several surgeries and chemo, but his trachea would become obstructed again, making it near impossible to breathe. Bayen was out of options, and his doctors recommended palliative care, but also reached out to one last glimmer of hope, Paolo Macchiarini. Paolo collaborated with scientists at the University College of London to manufacture a fully synthetic trachea that was seeded with Bayen's stem cells.
Interesting.
The operation took place in June 2011 and was widely covered by the media. It even made the front page of the New York Times. The operation was successful, and 15 months after the surgery, Bayen reported he was tumor-free and breathing normally. He was back in Iceland with his wife and 3 children, one of which he thought he'd never have the opportunity to know. With the 1 successful implant under his belt, Paolo Macchiarini performed another operation on a cancer patient and electrical engineer, Christopher Lyles, of Maryland. This would take place 5 months after Bayen's surgery. The procedure seemed to be a success, and Lyles claimed to be feeling good. However, he sadly passed away a few months later after returning home to the States. The family didn't have an autopsy to learn the cause of death, and Dr. Macchiarini called Lyles' death a terrible loss. Dr. Macchiarini went on to complete 2 more similar procedures in Russia. The patients, Yulia Tulik and Alexander Zozulia, were discharged from the hospital, and Macchiarini reports they were doing well.
I like how you just have a picture of a trachea instead of Alexander.
I couldn't find a picture of him. So now you can see what an artificial trachea looks like.
Yeah, it looks like it's covered in mustard.
Yeah, it does.
Those are like the stem cells that they bathe the trachea in.
Oh, they bathe it? Because that's supposed
to make it so your body doesn't reject it. Oh. But yeah, they like take a little pipette and like bathe it with the stem cells.
Interesting. And
the New York Times article that was published on September 15th, 2012, about Dr. Macchiarini and his progress with artificial tracheas caught the eye of broadcast journalist Meredith Vieira. She immediately saw a story and contacted Benita Alexander, a very successful producer at NBC. Vieira wanted Benita to look into Paolo for a television story on regenerative medicine. Some background on Benita Alexander. Benita was an award-winning producer at NBC. She came from a difficult upbringing, but persevered, graduating magna cum laude with a degree in journalism. She went on to work at several local news stations where she grew up in Michigan. She eventually met and married a fellow reporter named John Newell, and the two moved to New York City to start their life together. This is where Benita started her career on NBC's Dateline. The couple had a daughter, Jacina, in 2003, but amicably divorced in 2009. They remained friends while co-parenting their daughter. In 2012, Benita went on to remarry a ballroom dance instructor named Edson June. Over the years, Benita worked with big names in the industry and won many awards, including two Emmys. She was very respected in her field, hence why Meredith Vieira wanted her to work on this important story, a story of a world-renowned surgeon making incredible progress in regenerative medicine. At the time, Benita was in a really hard place. Her first husband, John, was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. He was in the hospital and Benita was struggling on how to prepare her young daughter for what was to come. It weighed on her as she sat in a fancy French restaurant waiting for her first meeting with the famous surgeon. When he turned the corner and greeted her with a smile, Benita recalls she immediately felt smitten. She didn't know it at the time, but Paolo confided in others that he had the same reaction to Benita. Paolo was charming. He had a George Clooney look about him. And I actually think he looks like Tudor's dad.
Oh, I can see that. I can see that. Oh my God. But I can see George Clooney,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he does look like George.
He was brilliant and spoke 7 different languages. But all of that aside, he had a good heart. He truly believed in what he was doing. He told Benita about an upcoming surgery he had planned. It was another first. He'd be performing another synthetic trachea transplant on a toddler.
Whoa.
A 2-year-old Canadian-Korean girl named Hannah Warren.
Wow. Oh my God. That must have been really scary.
Yeah.
Aww.
Hannah was born without a trachea and had spent her entire life in a Seoul hospital. Her parents looked to Dr. Macchiarini as a beacon of hope for their daughter, a chance at leaving the hospital and having a normal life. The surgery would take place that April, and the documentary would have a huge focus on Hannah, her surgery, and her chance at a normal life. As Benita met with Paolo more and more, a friendship began to develop. It was only a matter of time before she confided in him about what was going on in her own personal life. Things were a mess. She was dissatisfied with her current marriage and also struggling with her first husband's cancer diagnosis. Paolo, having worked with many terminally ill patients, was an incredible resource to Benita. He helped her navigate her complicated feelings and suggested ways to talk about death with her daughter.
So it's her first husband, so she's not married to the guy with brain cancer anymore.
No, they got divorced, but they were still like co-parenting their daughter together. Okay. So they were like still friendly. And she was married to a ballroom dancer.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Sorry.
Like, they got married in the year prior.
Okay.
So she was married when she was talking to Paolo, yeah. Which, I don't know, Benita. But okay.
Scandalous.
Benita said that Paolo was a pillar of strength for her during that time and would always listen and offer gentle advice. Benita was developing feelings for Paolo, but pushed them away. It was a bedrock rule of journalism not to get involved with someone you're doing a story on. Your objectivity would go out the window, and that could not happen. April 2013 rolled around, and Benita and Paolo found themselves in Peoria, Illinois for a number of weeks as she worked on the NBC special and Paolo prepared for Hannah's big surgery. The two would often meet after work for quiet dinners. Benita was struggling. She had just found out that her first husband, John, had slipped into a coma. She had lost her opportunity to give him a proper goodbye.
Oh.
She was devastated and Paolo was there as a shoulder to cry on. He told her that she needed to find her own way to say goodbye to John, or else she'd never get over it. So Benita thought about it and came up with an idea. She decided that the way she'd say goodbye was to drop three of John's favorite flowers into a nearby river, one for her, one for John, and one for their daughter. Paolo offered to help and picked her up on the back of his motorcycle. Okay, dude, we can just take a car to the flower shop. We don't have to go on the back of a motorcycle here.
Yeah, for real.
It's just a little much. They stopped at a flower shop where Benita picked out three birds of paradise, and the two rode off in search of the perfect spot for Benita to say her goodbyes. She spotted a beautiful area by a park, and Paolo pulled over to let her take a moment by the river. After she said her goodbyes, she tearfully made her way back to Paolo, where he pulled her into a heartfelt hug. It was then Benita knew she was falling for this man. And that night, Paolo and Benita made love.
Oh my god. Bow, bow, bow,
bow, bow, bow, bow. I don't know. Like, she's married.
Yeah.
So I couldn't find anything about when she got divorced or, like, what the deal is with that, but I just could not get over that point.
Yeah, it's a big no-no.
John passed away shortly after from cancer, and Benita would soon be experiencing her own health scare. Her doctor discovered uterine fibroids and said they were potentially cancerous. All she could think about was how her daughter had just lost her dad. What if something happened to her? After Benita recovered from the surgery, Paolo whisked her away to Venice to get her mind off things. They were still working on the NBC story, but Benita couldn't hold back her feelings anymore. She decided to go all in and keep her romance a secret until the project wrapped up.
Oh boy.
Hannah's surgery went well, and the little girl was recovering. Because Hannah was born without a trachea, she'd never tasted anything before. Paolo gave Hannah a lollipop, and she looked at it with a puzzled look on her face. After being shown what to do, she gave it a try and her eyes lit up.
Aww.
Sugar was good, and now she could taste it like every other child her age. And there were many more firsts ahead of her.
That's awesome.
I know, baby. After leaving Illinois, Paolo wined and dined Benita. It was a lifestyle completely unfamiliar to her. Five-star hotels, expensive champagne, shopping sprees, and jewelry, poems, and hearts made of rose petals. All of that really trite BS.
Yeah.
It was over the top. It was a fairy tale romance. They were like a pair of teenagers. 3 months into the relationship, Benita introduced Paolo to her daughter. They hit it off right off the bat. Paolo had two kids of his own back in Italy. They lived with their mother, who was his wife that he was now separated from. They were 17 and 22 years old. While the kids had their lives in Italy, Paolo resided alone in Spain. Paolo often had work in Russia, so he decided to take Benita along. She had been recovering from an infection from her surgery, but her doctor gave her the all clear to travel. He also had good news. The fibroids were not cancerous. During the trip, Benita started experiencing severe pain around the area of her incision. After dinner one night, they went back to their room and Benita was doubled over in pain. Paolo examined her, and when he saw her incision site, he looked up at her and asked,
"Do you trust me?"
What?
"Do you trust me?"
She did.
Oh God.
Of course.
He went into the bathroom and grabbed a pair of her travel scissors.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
That Benita kept. And without saying a word, he plunged them into her wound.
Oh, the fuck?
Dude.
Absolutely not.
No.
No, thank you. Take me to a hospital.
Yeah, seriously. No. What the hell is wrong with this guy?
Green pus started oozing out of the gash.
Oh my God.
And she immediately started to feel better.
Well, I guess you
when
would.
When she returned to New York, yeah. I guess you're a doctor, you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Ugh.
When she returned to New York, she saw her doctor and he told her that his impromptu surgery potentially saved her life. The infection could have killed her.
Well, okay.
If you say so. In July of 2013, Paolo and Benita received some bad news.
No!
Hannah Warren wasn't healing properly and required another surgery. It was unsuccessful and Hannah passed away.
No! She's such a cute little girl.
I know, she's really cute.
I know, she's Adrian's age.
Aww. Oh my god.
She looks like Boo from Monsters, Inc.
She does.
A little bit.
It was devastating. Hannah's parents were grateful, though. Grateful that Hannah was able to make some sort of contribution to regenerative medicine. And grateful for Dr. Macchiarini for taking a chance on her. Paolo said the death of Hannah only pushed him to be better, to do more. He told Benita that he saw Hannah as his guardian angel now, and that she'd be with him during every operation. The documentary was focused mainly on Hannah, and they'd have to shift the focus now. They couldn't let America fall in love with this little girl and then deal with the devastation that the life-saving surgery contributed to her death. Benita decided that she would instead put the focus on Dr. Macchiarini, his life, his work, the challenges and successes he experienced while changing the world through his artificial tracheas. The project wrapped, and Paolo and Benita officially began their relationship without the stress and guilt of their working relationship weighing on them. They celebrated their first Christmas together in New York. Just her, Paolo, and her daughter. Paolo handed Benita a small box and said this particular present was special.
Ooh.
She opened it, and to her surprise, it was a beautiful engagement ring.
No way. I'm so surprised.
No way. Paolo proposed, and Benita was overjoyed. She later found out that he'd spent over $100,000 wow. on this ring.
Excuse Holy me. Shit. Mm-hmm. I've never had $100,000 in my entire life.
Yeah. Nor have I. She looked forward to spending the rest of the holidays with her new fiancé. But Paolo didn't stick around. He was acting very secretive about where he was going. Benita pressed. He said he was on call for what he called a VIP surgery. Sounds fun.
Okay.
After he swore her to secrecy, he confided that he was part of a highly classified group of doctors from around the world who cater to the world's VIPs.
What? Who are the world's VIPs? Like, politicians and famous people or something?
Yeah. So over time, Paolo would reveal that he had operated on Bill and Hillary Clinton.
What?
Emperor Akihito of Japan and President Obama.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
That June, the NBC story aired. It was a 2-hour special called A Leap of Faith. So, Benita hosted a screening party in a space that she had rented out, and all of her family and friends were in attendance. They, along with 2 million viewers, were captivated by Paolo's contribution to regenerative medicine. Little did they know, the doctor and the producer were romantically involved. Everyone was so impressed with Paolo's brilliance, and after the screening, he gave a speech saying he could not wait to marry Benita.
We still don't know if she's divorced.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we still don't know if she's divorced. I'm assuming she is if she's engaged.
Yeah,
now,
but yeah.
They said without
also,
the guilt and everything.
Also, still don't know if Paolo is divorced because he was separated. He wasn't right. Like, technically divorced. So these two, silly billies. Paolo didn't just spoil Benita. He spoiled her family and friends as well. He was generous with his money, treating everyone to dinner at the most expensive restaurants, cooking them gourmet meals. Benita's friends were all in with Paolo. The couple had all of their friends' approval. A few months later, Benita sent out the save the date for their wedding. It would take place July 11th, 2015. Paolo wanted them to get married in Italy, so the couple, along with Benita's daughter, flew to Italy so Benita could meet his mother and they could go scout locations. Unfortunately, she didn't get a chance to meet his children or his former partner, who lived in Italy, too. Which is weird, right? You'd want to meet your fiancé's kids and
while you're in the country, you're going to be co-parenting
Yeah.
It's not like you go there every day.
They went place after place, and Benita would have been happy with any of the locations. But Paolo wanted something more extravagant. He told Benita to let him handle all of the wedding planning. He would make sure it was really special, and he wanted her to only worry about looking beautiful and enjoying the day. Benita initially didn't like the idea. She was excited to curate their wedding together. She told her friends about the idea, and they thought it was kind of romantic. After some thought, Benita agreed. She was even a little excited at the idea of a surprise. After all, Paolo was amazing at surprises. He made her promise she wouldn't ask any questions. All she had to worry about was picking the invitations, finding a dress, and showing up. Paolo also had good news. His divorce had finally gone through. This was something Benita was nervous about, and she felt the weight lifted off her shoulders. Paolo did let Benita in on one thing he wanted for the wedding. He said he always wanted a huge Catholic wedding in a beautiful cathedral, but Benita wasn't even Catholic, and they were both divorced. Benita argued it was frowned upon for divorcees to be married in the Catholic Church, but Paolo said he had connections in Rome and he would get it sorted out. Benita shrugged, if it worked out, it worked out. In October of 2014, Benita got a voicemail from Paolo that she assumed had to be a joke. He had just visited the Vatican to ask about priests that would be willing to marry divorcees. In the voicemail, he told Benita that Pope Francis had agreed to marry them for their July wedding.
What? Pope Francis. Highly doubt that. Starting to think this guy's a little good, too good to be true.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Benita called Paolo right away, and he answered the phone laughing. She asked, does the Pope even do weddings? She thought he was fucking with her, so she hung up on him and started Googling. Apparently, just 1 month prior, the Pope had married 20 couples at the Vatican. It seemed absurd. Why them, of all people? Paolo said he had sat down with the Pope, and he had offered to marry them as a thanks for being his personal doctor. Benita recalled reading about how, when Pope John Paul II was dying, Paolo Macchiarini was summoned urgently to the Vatican as one of the top thoracic surgeons in the world. He explained that after helping at the Vatican in 2005, he had been asked to join that exclusive network of doctors that catered to the world's elite. The Pope was another one of his patients that he called on. Pope Francis wasn't just marrying them as a thank you. He also had ulterior motives. He wanted this wedding between two divorcees to serve as an example of how the church is moving toward a more forward-thinking culture. And if you know anything about Pope Francis, you know he has made waves with wanting the church to be a more inclusive place for the LGBT community and divorcees, etc.
Yeah.
Benita was sworn to secrecy. But there was no way she wasn't going to tell her close friends about this. When she did, all they could do was laugh. It felt so completely ludicrous, and many of them didn't believe it. Two of Benita's friends wanted to size up Paolo in person, so they invited the couple to dinner. Paolo explained to them his relationship with the Pope and how he'd come to offer to marry them, and when Paolo explained it, it actually felt more believable. He is, after all, one of the leading surgeons in the world. The whole thing was ridiculous, but for someone to make it all up felt even more ridiculous.
Yeah, like at that point you're like, okay, it does to me seem like it's not totally out of the realm of possibility because he's operated on all these famous people and, you know, he's supposedly got connections in Rome, whatever. Oh my God.
Right, he's Italian. He's like super famous surgeon.
Yeah.
And the like for someone to lie to so many people about something so like that you could like fact check seemed actually more crazy than it actually being true.
Yeah, yeah.
Benita had already bought her dress, but now she was being married by the Pope. She needed something special. A meeting was set up with Benita and an up-and-coming couture fashion designer named Matthew Christopher. They were given NDAs to sign prior to the meeting and were told this was going to be an extremely high-profile wedding. They were all like, what's going on?
Like, who the fuck are these people? So, like, why? Yeah, like...
When Benita sat down with Matthew and his team, she broke the news. She would be getting married by the Pope. Their jaws were on the floor. The team was so excited to work on a dress for such a high-profile wedding. As they worked together, Benita grew close with Matthew and his team. On a trip to California to meet Benita's family, Paolo announced at the dinner table that because of the hype from the Pope and all of his VIP patients, the VIP guest list was growing. World leaders, A-list celebrities. Paolo was like an excited little kid just blabbing about all the exciting updates he would receive. John Legend and Andrea Bocelli would be performing at the wedding. The food would be prepared by a 3-Michelin-star chef. Benita was now tasked with the invitations. What kind of invitations do you even send for a wedding of this caliber? Something from Mint.com?
Yeah, nope.
Not sponsored? No, absolutely not. She ended up finding some simple yet classy embossed invitations that came wrapped in a lambskin leather envelope.
Jesus.
Oh my god.
She spent $10,000 on these invitations.
Jesus.
Oh my god.
H.
The wedding would take place at the Castel Gandolfo, the Pope's summer residence, and everyone would be invited to stay there for the festivities. For free.
For free?
No.
For 4 days.
For free?
No.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Paolo met with Benita's dress designer, Matthew Christopher, and his husband to coordinate some important details for the big day. Benita would be riding with the Pope in his carriage to the castle. I hope they don't mean that, like, Jeep with the glass box around it, because that's not cute.
Oh my god, the Pope mobile.
Yeah. Yes, so they would need Matthew Christopher's help with the dress. They needed to figure out how best to get him into the castle for the wedding before security locked the doors, because there was going to be tons of security.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because Pope.
Yeah.
After talking details, Paolo asked Benita to leave the table so he could speak privately to the men. The Pope wanted them to participate more fully in the wedding ceremony. Matthew's husband, who is Catholic and from Italy, said, quote, "I almost fell off my chair. Growing up, I was always looking for this transformative moment. So when we were told we would take confession and communion from the Pope as 2 gay married men, that was it. For me, it was almost as if God said, 'You've been waiting for this moment. Here it is.' It was very emotional. Matthew and I started crying," end quote. So that was powerful.
Yeah. Damn.
At this time, they were getting ready to mail out the invitations, so it was important that Benita first talk to her executive producer at NBC and let them know what had developed from the story they worked on. Sorry, I kind of, like, hooked up with the subject of our documentary.
Yeah. Oops. Yeah, now we're getting married.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't just find out by receiving a wedding invitation in the mail. Some colleagues were a little taken aback that Benita would cross that line as a journalist, but then it began to look more like an opportunity. NBC was now looking at exclusively covering Benita and Paolo's high-profile wedding. The couple had been discussing plans for where life would take them after the wedding. Paolo insisted that Benita and her daughter come live with him at his home in Barcelona. Benita was supposed to visit the home several times over the course of their relationship, but something would always come up. Paolo had to rush off to an emergency surgery, or the house was having some renovations done. She agreed to move there with her daughter, despite never visiting. She saw it as a leap of faith, much like Paolo's patience would take with him. And I think we'll take a little bit of a break at this point.
Alrighty.
What do you guys think so far?
So far, I'm just not so optimistic about this. I know that there's got to be something else that's going to happen, obviously, but so much of it seems so, like, too good to be true.
Yeah, I'm wondering if exactly. This wedding's actually going to happen.
Yeah.
As I always say, if someone's nice to you, it's not good.
It's not good.
What do I always say? I don't remember.
If they're too nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god. Can't wait to find out what happens.
Okay, welcome back, everybody.
We're back from the break.
Thank you for welcoming me back.
Here we go. But many of Paolo's patients wouldn't experience the supposed benefits from his miracle surgery, and colleagues of Paolo began to take notice. Benita didn't know the half of it.
Oh, no.
Let's take a look at the list of recipients of Paolo's life-saving handiwork. Uh-oh. Or, as some would call them, human experiments.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
Anna Mariam Tech-Lesenbet Bayen was told by Macchiarini that this revolutionary surgery was his only chance of survival and persuaded him to agree to the new procedure. He was the very first patient to receive the synthetic trachea. He seemed to be recovering well and even went on to complete his PhD. But in January of 2013, a year and a half after the implant, Bayen died while undergoing treatments at the Karolinska Institute.
Oh, no.
I know. He had three kids.
Ugh.
An autopsy revealed that Bayen had a chronic lung infection and a clot in his lung, and the synthetic trachea had come loose.
Oh, God.
The next patient that received surgery from Macchiarini was Christopher Lyles, the American engineer, and he died shortly after returning home to Maryland from his surgery, and no autopsy was performed.
Oh,
no autopsy.
I wonder, did they say what the cause of death was?
It had to do with, like, complications.
Oh, okay.
But they didn't look into further, like, what exactly was the cause.
Sometimes I've noticed with cases that I have, also, if they've had a, you know, any length of a hospital stay, the medical examiners will say, no, I'm not doing an autopsy because you have hospital records and you can tell, you know, everything that happened up until their death or whatever. So that's not super surprising to me, but.
Well, Christopher was one of the patients that had cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And the trachea was, like, removing the cancer and, like, he has this new implant. So we don't know exactly what the cause is. But there was a third patient. Yulia Tulik underwent the surgery electively after she suffered a tracheostomy after a bad car accident. Do you guys know what a tracheostomy is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like a trach tube? Yeah. Like a hole in your neck.
Yeah.
Okay. I, you know, learning new things. I researched this. The artificial trachea was not crucial to her survival, yet Paolo performed the experimental surgery anyway. The plastic trachea came loose and had to be replaced. Her body was literally trying to push it out of her body. Her mother claimed that she would cough up rotting pieces of flesh caused by the infection.
Oh my God.
Yulia could see now that Paolo didn't care about her or his patients. She lived in agony until she died shortly after her trachea was replaced a second time.
Oh my God. How awful.
Turns out, an audit by the Russian government later found that Macchiarini had operated without a Russian medical license.
Oh my God.
What?
Idiot. Why would you do that?
The next patient, Alexander Zazulia, had a similar story to Yulia's. He had to have a tracheostomy after a car accident, and he did not require the artificial trachea. But Paolo, even after the result of Yulia's surgery, went through it anyway. Okay. He had complications from the initial surgery, which resulted in a second, and he passed away 2 months later under unclear circumstances.
Oh, God.
And then there was Hannah Warren. The toddler, with a life expectancy of only 6 years. Did her parents have the full story when they agreed to try this experimental surgery? I wonder if they knew the final outcomes, if they would have tried a different avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was about to come to a head. While Paolo and Benita were planning their dream wedding, four doctors in Sweden began to accuse Paolo of scientific misconduct, claiming that the papers that he'd published about his transplants were full of blatant lies.
Oh, God.
So basically, he was falsifying information about the results of the surgeries, making it seem as though they were more successful than they were.
Ugh.
Jesus Christ.
Benita learned about these claims in the New York Times.
Oh, wait. Are you serious?
Wow. Yes. She read about it in the New York Times.
Oh, my God. I mean, honestly, it doesn't surprise me now, just kind of figuring out how his personality is.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's some bullshit.
Why didn't he tell her about this? Paolo claimed he didn't want to upset Benita and that he was the victim of a witch hunt by jealous colleagues.
Uh-huh.
He was doing something that had never been done before, and with that comes jealousy and apprehension. Which, I mean...
Maybe.
Maybe, like...
But this much?
You know.
Yeah, from this many people and similar stories that actually occurred.
And not to mention, all your patients have died.
Yeah.
I mean, with every new medical, I guess, feat, like, it's all experimental. Like, heart transplants, lung transplants, yeah. Like...
Somebody has to do it first.
Yeah. Somebody has to do it first, and they're not all going to be successful.
Right.
Obviously. But a plastic trachea.
Yeah.
Something tells me that is a little bit different than an actual human trachea that you would... I don't know.
What material did they say it was made of? Just like...
Tricky?
It's made of plastic. It's 3D printed, the same material as like a water bottle or a soda bottle.
Tracheas are rigid, but yeah, I don't know. I've felt a human trachea before, just by the way.
Oh my god.
At work. It feels like a, you know, the phone cables on payphones? That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Okay.
So it is plastic. It is hard.
To do the trick.
It is hard. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. I keep saying it's not out of the realm of possibility for everything. But
I've always heard of people like using 3D printed materials for surgical procedures.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It seems like it would be in the realm of possibility. But I don't know enough about it, I guess.
I think it depends. But it's still got to be... It's still...
Like a certain medical grade.
You still got to be able to move your neck and stuff. So, you know, it depends like on how hard it is.
Great.
But tracheas are hard. Tracheas.
Yeah.
Tracheas are actually hard.
Well, the goal was that they would, like, coat it with these stem cells so that it would eventually grow into a working trachea.
Yeah.
But it seems like, based on all of these patients, they were getting infections, and it was just trying to push out this, like, plastic so
obviously
trachea.
Obviously, he was doing something wrong.
Yeah, because what happens, I mean, even if you coat it in stem cells, the whole thing isn't made of stem cells, so that part of the plastic is still going to reject, I feel like.
Also, he had claimed that he had tested it first on animals, and he did not.
Oh, that's not good.
Which is something that you, like, I'm sorry, Abby, but you have to test these types of things on animals.
Yes, no, I totally get that. I'm very against, like, animal testing when it comes to cosmetics and shit, that doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but
cosmetics.
Honestly, with things like medical stuff.
Life-saving.
You know, you kind of have, like medications, things like that. That's something that is necessary. And I do agree with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of tracheas, Mallory, do you remember punching me in the trachea all the time when we were kids?
Yeah, I do.
Did you really?
It was awful.
All right. The investigation was led by... Guys, these names? Swedish? I don't know. Kjell Esplund, chairman of the Swedish Council on Medical Ethics. He found that the scientific foundation for the new operation was weak and accused Macchiarini of failing to carry out risk analyses before the patients received their operations, or to seek the necessary ethical approval. The surgeons, putting their findings into a long whistleblowing report, gave it to the Karolinska Institute's administrators, who promptly ignored it. Only after a leaked copy of the report made its way into a New York Times article did the administrators commission an outside expert to investigate Macchiarini's work. The investigator concluded that Macchiarini had indeed committed research fraud.
Oh boy.
All of these accusations and articles caused a whirlwind of press asking Paolo for comment. Benita put on her PR hat and agreed to help him sort it out. They locked themselves in a hotel room where they worked going through all the emails and composing responses. Benita recalls how tense this time was in their lives. It was night and day. I mean,
imagine you're in Venice with rose petals, and now you're locked in a hotel room trying to defend yourself mm-hmm. because of medical malpractice or scientific malpractice.
God.
But good news for Benita and Paolo. The Karolinska Institute remained loyal to him and threatened to fire the whistleblowers, and many of the claims were dismissed.
Wow, that's kind of crazy.
Well, they're a huge frickin' hospital and institution. They're the ones that choose who wins the Nobel Prize yeah. for medicine. And they just shrugged off all these accusations and they believed in Paolo.
Wow. So
the wedding was getting closer. And May 13th was Benita's last day of work at NBC. She had put in her resignation and pulled her daughter out of her school, informing them they would not be returning. This was the start of their new life. The very next day, Benita took all of her girlfriends out for a spa day to thank them for their love and support over the years and to clear her head. It felt like everything was going wrong. They all had a great time, sipping champagne, getting their nails done, and laughing so hard that they had to be told to keep it down twice.
Mm-hmm.
They took that as their cue that it was probably time to leave. As Benita took out her credit card to pay, she scrolled through her phone, checking her texts and emails, when an email caught her eye, and she felt her stomach drop. The subject line simply read, "The Pope."
What?
The email came from a former coworker, and it contained a link to an article that detailed the Pope's upcoming trip to South America. And the trip was happening the day of her wedding.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
The trip was planned for, like, some time, too. So,
yeah.
It wasn't like it was, like, a spur-of-the-moment thing.
Oh, my God.
In that instant, life started to unravel for Benita. Her friends could see it all over her face. They took her back to her apartment and tried to calm her down while she tried to get in touch with Paolo. She kept telling herself it had to be some kind of misunderstanding. When she finally reached Paolo, he sounded just as shocked as she was. But he tried to explain it away. This had to be some kind of mix-up. He explained that it must be some sort of Vatican politics, and he said he'd be on his way to the Vatican to sort it out. Benita didn't get her hopes up. Even when Paolo reported that the Pope would cut his trip short in order to officiate the ceremony, she just wasn't buying that. At this
yeah.
point,
neither.
Benita's journalistic instincts started to kick in. Finally.
For real.
God damn it. And she decided she'd do some of her own sleuthing. Benita had her friends call the venues where they'd be having their wedding celebrations to check if there was anything booked. Sure enough, no wedding was booked for that day.
Oh my God.
I don't know what I'm saying. Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh wow. But it's like.
But can you imagine?
I
can't imagine. No.
Well, what was his plan the date of...
I know. What was he going to do?
Was he just going to dip out?
That is the question. That was the question.
And what is the point? Just to impress her? Or yeah, like, exactly. what are you doing this for?
That you could have impressed her? I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
So nothing was booked, and they hadn't even heard of either Paolo Macchiarini or Benita Alexander. Benita asked Paolo to fly to New York and look her in the eye and tell her what the hell was going on. When he arrived, she told him what she found. No one claimed to know anything about their wedding or who they are. To that, he responded, "Of course they'd say that. It would be a security risk to tell just anyone about this event with the Pope and all of the VIPs being in attendance. There's no way they can give out that kind of information." This kind of made sense to Benita. But things got weirder. Paolo got really quiet and said, "Look, now you're asking me too many questions." Benita had no idea what he was about to say, but you could cut the tension with a knife. He said, "You know that network of doctors I was telling you about? Well, it's run by the CIA.
Oh.
And I'm not just a doctor. I'm a trained sniper."
Okay.
So, schizophrenia.
Sure.
Let's let that sink in for a moment.
Just live with that for a moment, yeah.
Let's sit with that for a second.
This guy has some mental health issues.
Yeah, oh no, or he's just scrambling. He's really scrambling.
Yeah, that, or it kind of sounds like he could have schizophrenia and actually believe this shit.
Well, I mean, it's definitely possible.
I think BetterHelp should sponsor us right now. Benita started laughing, but Paolo was dead serious.
Oh my god, are you right, Abby?
This chilled Benita to the bone. This man performed surgeries on people.
Oh, Jesus.
He teaches at the institution that hands out the Nobel Prize in Medicine. Yeah. Why would he make up something so unbelievably crazy?
Oh, my God.
As soon as he walked out of the door, Benita hired a private investigator, a former Philadelphia detective.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, very good call.
He was intrigued and worried for Benita. A man with so much power and influence, with the gift of knowing several languages, the cash flow to travel, charm, and good looks. Was he in the mob, or was he some kind of spy? He started with the wedding and quickly learned that it was all a sham. Nothing was booked.
Oh my god.
With only 30 days until the wedding, Benita decided that they should cancel the wedding.
It was canceled a long time ago.
That's a great decision, from Benita. Great job. Also, what the fuck, dude? Like, what if that happened to you?
Seriously.
So Benita sent out an email to all of the guests, but most had already booked their flights, hotels, and purchased formal attire for what was supposed to be the wedding of a lifetime.
Oh my god.
Benita didn't tell most people the truth about why, including Paolo. She told him that he needed to focus on these complaints against him. And that's what everyone else assumed, that the wedding was being postponed so that he can figure out all of these, like, complaints that were being filed against him. Because it was in the news.
Yeah.
She pretended like she didn't know she was onto him. It was a game of cat and mouse. She started recording their phone calls. She had all of the jewelry he had given her appraised. So that $100,000 engagement ring that he bought her was only worth $1,000.
Only $1,000.
She asked Paolo to reimburse her for the $50,000 she had spent on invitations and her dresses, because she didn't purchase just one dress. She purchased, like, four, because it was, like, going to be a four-day affair.
Oh, my God.
So she was out $50,000. So she asked him to reimburse her, but Paolo claimed to be broke, saying that all the vendors for the wedding slapped him with a huge cancellation fee.
So that wiped him out.
He reported spending upwards of $2 million on the wedding.
What?
Which we know is a lie. Benita knows it's a lie, but she rolls with it, letting him think she believes him.
Oh my god.
On the day she was supposed to get married, Benita gets on a flight to Italy. She told Paolo she'd be going to upstate New York with some girlfriends, and he'd said he'd be in Russia for work. She meets up with three of her friends who decided to go on the trip anyway, despite the canceled wedding. They tried to make it a fun adventure, but Benita couldn't get over the fact that she'd been living a lie.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't stop wondering, if he lied about this, what else would he lie about? Her mind went to Paolo's patients. The complaints. She needed answers. She thought maybe she could find them at the one place Paolo never took her to. His home in Barcelona, where she was supposed to bring her daughter to live for the rest of their life. She had a couple of friends meet her in Spain to go on a mission to find out more. Benita donned a cheap blonde wig as a disguise, and the friends drove to the beautiful property. They agreed that Benita should stay in the car, and the two friends would go knock on the door. Their story was going to be that they were traveling with the tickets they purchased for the wedding, and they wanted to stop by with a wedding gift. Then they'd hand over whoever answered the door a bottle of shitty wine with a card that said Paolo and Benita Macchiarini. Because he was supposed to be in Russia.
Yeah.
So they figured maybe like a housekeeper would be there.
Right. Oh, so God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Uh-oh.
They approach the door. Knock.
Who answers?
And sure enough, Paolo.
Of course.
Answers the door.
Of course he did.
Looking very surprised.
Holy shit.
What are you doing here?
He asked. He was very standoffish and didn't invite them in. Two of your fiancé's best friends show up at your door in Barcelona with wine, and you don't ask them to come in?
I know.
Yeah.
Benita watches from the car, filming the whole thing as she loses her shit.
Oh my God.
The friends hand Paolo the wine and start making their way back to the car. Just as Benita was about to get out of the car to confront him with the fury of a thousand suns,
yeah.
She spots two children coming out of the house.
What? But we know he had kids, right?
He had grown kids. Kids at this point in Italy.
Okay. Oh my Jesus.
So two young little baby children come out of the house and a young woman.
Oh my God.
But these weren't the children she knew of in Italy. And this wasn't his ex-wife either.
Oh my God.
She stops herself. She can't put these children in this situation.
Yeah.
Paolo had a third family that Benita never even knew about.
Ugh.
Benita was reeling. She was losing it.
Yeah. I would be too.
Mm-hmm.
Would you not commit murder?
I would commit murder. I would.
Once Benita was able to breathe again, she and her friends sat down at a McDonald's. And she unleashed her wrath in the form of a text. Quote, this is just a synopsis. How many of us are there? You are despicable. Who the hell are you? You are a liar and a fraud of the worst possible dimension.
Oh my God.
Can you guys guess what Paolo replied?
You're the only one in my life.
What are you talking about?
Paolo replied,
wow!
Wow!
Okay. Wow. Okay.
That was literally the last she ever
That's
heard
all of. He said?
My God.
Wow!
Oh my God. That's insane.
Mm. On the flight back to New York, Benita was confronted with what her life was now. Her heart was broken. She didn't have a job. She lost her insurance and benefits. She was a single mom. She was out $50,000 from this fake wedding.
Ugh.
And her poor daughter, who just lost her father, had grown attached to Paolo.
Oh, God.
And now she was losing him, too.
Jeez.
In addition to the private investigator she'd hired in the U.S., she'd hired an Italian PI as well. And he discovered that Paolo was still married to his supposed ex-wife.
Oh, wow.
She found out that the woman she'd seen in Barcelona had been living there for years. But are we surprised?
No.
And in addition to Benita, he had at least three other women in his life.
Oh my God.
And who knows how many children.
I hate this guy.
Freak turd.
When she returned home, Benita felt obligated to expose Paolo. If he was lying to her the way he had, there was no way he wasn't lying in his medical life.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote to the Karolinska Institute, letting them know that their star surgeon wasn't who he said he was. She also had an interview with Vanity Fair, who uncovered more lies from Paolo. They uncovered that his resume was full of fabrications. I don't know how to say this name. I'm so sorry. I think I heard it pronounced Bo. Bo Lindquist read the Vanity Fair article and was blown away. Bo is a Swedish filmmaker that followed Paolo around documenting his life and surgeries for an entire year prior to Benita. After reading the article, he released a 3-part documentary about Paolo called The Experiments. And I wish I could have watched it, but it's like in Swedish and it's not available. But it had quite the impact. It premiered in Sweden in 2016 and in unrelenting detail outlined Macchiarini's scientific con game and the role the Karolinska Institute played in it. The reaction from the Swedish public was swift. They demanded that officials take action, and this time they did. Macchiarini was finally forced to leave the institute, as were several of the administrators who had refused to take action against him earlier. It took a television show for there to be action taken against Paolo Macchiarini.
That's crazy.
Because doctors, 4 Swedish doctors, had evidence that they reported. All of these things that Paolo and Benita were trying to figure out. That was concrete evidence that they had against him. And they just loved him so much they were just like, fuck you. You can just be fired then. But I haven't even told you about the worst case of all.
Oh, great.
Oh, no.
Yeshim Satir was a Turkish woman in her early 20s. She had no problems whatsoever. However, she underwent a routine surgery in 2011 to treat excessive sweating in her hands, which apparently is kind of a dangerous surgery, and it's banned in Sweden, but she had it done in her home country of Turkey.
I didn't know you could have surgery for that.
Yeah, apparently it's if you have excessive sweating, there's surgeries you can have to treat it, but it's not very safe, so.
Wow.
During the operation, her trachea and left lung were injured. This botched surgery led her to suffer from lung drainage and a chronic cough. It wasn't life-threatening by any means, but the quality of her life wasn't what it used to be. She was referred to Dr. Macchiarini and traveled to Sweden to receive an operation that would improve her quality of life. Macchiarini's first odd move was that instead of looking at the existing imaging of Yeshim's injuries, or even having some done of his own, he claimed he had to open her up to do an exploratory thoracotomy.
Oh my god, no, why?
Which means he basically opened her up.
It's a super invasive.
Yes. Which means he basically opened her up between her ribs.
Mm-hmm.
Other surgeons thought this was extremely unusual, and it was very risky. The trachea is very fragile in that area. The procedure had gone catastrophically wrong.
Oh, God.
Paolo got too close to the injured area of the trachea, and when he was doing some traction to put his eyes on the injury, the trachea burst, and there was a massive air leakage.
Oh, my God.
She was now suffocating, and her right lung started bleeding uncontrollably.
Mm.
Blood was pooling in her lungs, and she was drowning.
Ugh.
He removed the right lung and was able to ventilate her.
Holy shit. She was put
on ECMO support, basically a machine that removes blood from the body, oxygenates it, and pumps it back in. She was now in critical condition. Paolo wanted to fix her fast, and he claimed the only way to do so was to implant one of his synthetic plastic tracheas.
Of course.
2 weeks later, she received her trachea and was the 5th patient to receive one.
Great.
Her health took a turn. Alarms went off in her hospital room. She looked panicked. She was suffocating. Her oxygen levels kept falling, and then her heart stopped.
Oh, God.
it was a little complicated because she had all of this stuff going on, but they decided they had to do some chest compressions, which was risky.
Yeah.
But it wasn't working. The surgeons who were there at the time were able to revive her, but they were astonished. Like, what the hell happened?
Wow, that's crazy.
Yesham stayed at the hospital for years, receiving hundreds of surgeries, organ transplants, hundreds.
Oh my god.
She was miserable and didn't even look like the same person she was when she came in.
It's awful.
Every 4 hours, someone had to suck mucus out of her throat so she wouldn't suffocate. It was a complete nightmare for her. So all of this is going on, and no one could get a hold of Paolo to look at his patient.
Of course.
The doctors had Paolo come to the hospital for a meeting to address Yesham's condition. While he showed up, he blamed Yesham's condition on every doctor but himself.
Of course. Yeah.
Yesham was in the room next door. She knew Dr. Macchiarini was coming, so she had help putting on her best dress and some makeup. It was no simple task for someone in Yesham's condition. She wanted to look pretty for her meeting with Paolo, so that he would help her.
What?
All of the doctors told him that she had dressed up special just for the occasion, but Paolo didn't care. He completely ignored her. He didn't even go into the room to see her.
Oh, wow.
This told Yesham two things. One, that he didn't care about her. And two, that there was no hope for her. Ugh. The doctors that Yesham was left with tried everything they could to help her. But after a hellish 6 years, Yesham passed away in March of 2017.
God, no.
So she was what, like 22? 21?
Like she was in her early 20s.
Okay.
By that point, she was probably in her mid-20s. So, Yesham's parents filed a lawsuit.
Good.
In June 2016, Swedish police opened an investigation into whether Paolo might have committed involuntary manslaughter. But all criminal charges against Macchiarini were dropped in October 2017.
What?
Are you serious?
The medical treatment in 4 out of 5 cases in Sweden were classified as negligent, but there was no proof of a criminal act.
Ugh.
In 2019, an Italian court sentenced Macchiarini to 16 months in prison for abuse of office and forging documents. So he served his time, and when he was released, he moved back to Spain.
How is negligence not a criminal offense? If you neglect a child, that's
exactly
fucking criminal offense.
I don't know. Like, that's what makes it so unbelievable and so infuriating.
Yeah.
On September 29th, 2020, Paolo Macchiarini was indicted on aggravated assault in Sweden.
What?
The case was reopened when new written evidence was obtained from individuals from 5 different countries. Quote, victims received serious physical injuries and great suffering as a result of the operations performed on them. Therefore, these operations are to be considered as aggravated assault, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
The trial against Paolo Macchiarini ended on May 23rd, 2022, and he was found guilty of having caused bodily harm, but not assault. He received probation on June 16th, 2022. Basically,
wow,
not the outcome that anyone wanted.
No.
A slap on the wrist.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's ridiculous.
Luckily, the prosecution filed an appeal and there will be another trial.
Oh, good.
Good. How can somebody literally perform surgeries, be found to not have a license while performing surgeries, and not go to prison?
In Russia.
That was only in Russia, so he had licenses.
But he also falsified a lot of credentials on his resume. Like he didn't have his I don't know all the terms. Fuck, my sister would. It's like he didn't have his fellowship at this place that he said he did. He didn't do this there. He didn't do that there. He falsified information on his resume. He didn't perform the proper, like, testing before he performed his operations on humans. He didn't check if it was ethical, or, like, didn't even consult about if it was ethical to perform these type of operations on people that didn't even need them.
Mm-hmm.
So, discussion. Why do you think Paolo did what he did, and how did he manage to go this far?
I think he just started on the path of, oh my god, I'm doing something so amazing. And then he, at least in terms of his career, not necessarily the stuff with Benita, but that he just kept that rolling, even like at all costs. And then I don't know, I guess he has to have some sort of thing in his personality that, I mean, A, he doesn't fucking care that he's lying to everybody in the whole world. Doesn't bother him at all, I guess. Just kind of that, like, sort of sociopathic, yeah, like...
for sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think that he, yeah, like, starting out what you were saying, like, he did all these crazy things that a lot of doctors haven't done. It got to his head.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of, like, kept going with it because he felt, like, the power that he... It was all just power-driven, honestly, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think he wanted to be recognized as the best, and he would do whatever it took to get to be that, the best.
Yeah.
But what I'm confused about is, why did he do that to Benita?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm like, he's just got to be some sort of, sort of, like, either... He's, like, a huge player, obviously, because he has, like, several women. And that part probably is he just had to keep each woman away from each other. So, you know, in reference to her not knowing about other women or his other family. But I don't know why he promised her, like, the world, though. I can't figure that out. It was, like, a
really big ordeal.
Yeah.
Like, he promised her everything. Like, the best...
The best of the best of the best.
He's definitely a major scam artist.
Yeah, for sure. A huge con man.
Yeah.
I think Benita... So, Benita has a TikTok, and she, reported on the whole trial and everything going on. I think that she thinks that he was addicted to seeing her so amazed and so infatuated and in love, like, with everything that he would do. He would just, like, get off on the fact that she was like, oh my god, like, wow, like, and just impressing people. Like, he was just, like, needing to be impressive to literally everyone that he would meet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That kind of ties in with his whole needing to be the best in his field, too.
Yeah, definitely goes hand in hand. I just can't believe that he made a mistake with his first patient. The first patient died. You would think that any good doctor would, like, look into that and be like, okay, what did I do wrong? Why did this happen? What should I do differently?
Yeah, and like, literally no improvements were made at all. Just kept doing the same old shit.
Almost sound like a fucking serial killer.
I know, really?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. Almost like...
Like, he knew.
What's that guy who used to perform experiments on people in the Holocaust?
Joseph Mengele?
Yeah.
Is that right?
It's almost like he was trying to just, like, perfect his craft on whoever would allow him so he could get the fame and notoriety that came with it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he didn't perfect it, it seemed like. Like, the same thing happened with each patient. Like, how...
That's true.
I don't know. He didn't seem to, like... make any changes each time to make it better.
Like to cash in the patients. Yes,
and every time he also got, like, a whole bunch of media coverage and, like,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
because they were better at first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but then, like, 2 or 3 months, even like a year and a half down the line, they would die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, yeah. What a piece of shit.
Yeah, I hate this guy.
I had a few, like, funny things I didn't know where to include in the story, and I just want to share it with you guys.
Okay.
So, as we know, Benita was into dancing because she married this ballroom dance instructor or whatever. So she was, like, really huge into dancing, and the only thing about Paolo that she was like, he doesn't dance. Like, he didn't know how to dance. So they travel to Mexico at some point in their relationship, and her friends are there too. A song comes on and he's like, let's dance. And she's like, you don't know how to dance. Anyway, he comes out and he's like full on fucking tangoing or whatever. What? The fuck. And she's like, what the fuck? I thought you didn't know how to dance. And he was like, I took 3 months of dance lessons, 5 days a week or whatever the fuck, so I could dance with you. And she was like, just so charmed by that.
So he definitely put in the work.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, Mallory, he was taking those dance lessons with another woman the whole time.
Oh my God. That he was romantically involved with?
Yeah.
Oh my God. What a garbage man.
Another thing. So he said he wanted to play Benita a song on the piano for their wedding. Like, he wanted to serenade her. So he bought, like, a piano, like a keyboard for their apartment in New York. And he would practice, and he would, like, send her videos of him playing songs on this piano that he was going to play. And he was, like, so good, like, perfect playing this, like, classical song on the piano. So when Benita and Paolo broke up, she decided to sell the piano on Craigslist. And the woman who bought it, they ended up becoming, like, best friends. I don't know, like, why, but they ended up becoming best friends. So, like, a few months after she sold this woman the piano, she texts Benita, like, do you know that this piano has pre-recorded music, like, on it?
So, oh my God! When he was sending
her these, like, songs, he was like, it was literally the pre-recorded music that came on the keyboard.
Oh, and, like, my God.
Wow. When she looked at the video, like, looked back at it and, like, really paid attention to it, like, his hands would be off
yeah.
the piano when it was, like, playing.
Wow.
What an idiot. Oh, my God. That's so stupid.
Very cringy.
Super cringy.
Also, you know, he was a sniper and a, like,
oh, right.
a doctor for the elite and all that. And at some point he had told her that, like, in her rings that he had bought her, there were cameras and tracking devices. He told her this.
What the fuck?
And, like, you should look at her TikTok, because she's, like, always making fun of all the stupid shit he would tell her and stuff.
Oh my God, yeah.
Just some interesting, weird
facts.
So I guess I should call out my sources real fast.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So obviously the New York Times, they were the ones that reported that initial article that got them to record that whole documentary about Paolo. Vanity Fair, they were the ones that chatted with Benita about the whole entire thing. Science.org, because, you know, I like to be educated. I like to know what's going on in the science community. I need to talk facts to you guys.
I need to know what a tracheostomy is.
I need to be able to tell you what an ECMO is. I need to be able to tell you what about all these things.
Yeah.
And then BBC.com, they had an article about him. Benita made a documentary about him in it's on Discovery Plus, so if you're a loser like me and have Discovery Plus, it's called He Lied About Everything. Mm. And I heard about this story on 2020, the podcast. They had an episode called True Lies, and that's how I heard about this. And strangely enough, I didn't know this, but you remember that podcast Dr. Death?
Yeah.
So good. There are more seasons to it that I didn't even know about.
I didn't know that either.
He was on season 3 of Dr. Death. That was all about him. You can't listen to it on anything but Amazon.
Oh, that's probably why I didn't know. Which
was really annoying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like a Wondery podcast, and they're, like, super, like, weird now. Wondery. But, yeah, those are my sources.
That was good. Yeah,
that was a good one. That was really good. A little bit of a deviation from what we normally do, which is nice. Yeah,
I bet you can understand why I liked it. Like,
I absolutely understand why you like it. Like, lying, people just lying about their entire fucking lives.
Yes, that's like my thing. But I also thought you would really enjoy it because it had to do with like the medical component.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It was really, that was a really good one.
I was wondering if he was like schizophrenic and it was gonna be some weird thing.
I know,
like
I thought you were onto something for a second.
For like one
he
second.
He might be. It you never could know, be. He might yeah. be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, another thing. So Benita went to his trial. Like she went to Sweden for his trial. And she was like reporting on every day of the trial. And she said that he looked so different.
Oh, when she really? Saw him.
He had like this little ponytail.
What?
It was like a little baby ponytail. It was like so cringy. And he just looked like haggard and messed up. So although he didn't get much jail time or any punishment whatsoever, his reputation is ruined. He has a ponytail now. He might be getting another trial, like, so maybe he'll go to jail.
Yeah,
hopefully.
And
he deserved it, that's for sure.
He could just be the king of the jail and just be super cool there.
Yeah, he can lie to those people and then it won't matter because he
like
can't.
Like Pam Hupp or like Shelley Notek.
Yeah, exactly. God. Oh my God.
But Shelley Notek is out though, right?
She's, or is no, she was supposed to be released, but they haven't released her.
Oh, I think I do remember hearing you say that.
I can't find anything about her being released, so I guess
I hope she doesn't get released because
she does not need to be released into the wild again. I'm so sorry.
Insane.
Yeah, can we take a vote on that?
Yeah,
like holy shit.
In favor of locking her up like, for the rest of her life.
I would be scared if I lived in that area and she came out of jail. I really would. Yeah, I'd be like.
She's terrifying.
Yeah.
She's a literal monster.
You guys interact with us. We've been getting a few more followers and stuff on Instagram, and Facebook kind of dropped off a little bit, but that's all right. Anyways, you can find us on Instagram at Rabbit Hole Happy Hour. Twitter, Twitter is just kind of died. Don't even
it's
worry
like
about
a
it.
Wasteland.
Don't even worry about Twitter. Who cares?
I've been on Twitter in a very long
time. We have a Facebook group. Come join us on Facebook. You can make your own threads and talk to people that also listen to the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or anything, you can always email us at rabbitholehappyhour@gmail.com. So that is it.
And leave us a review. A good one.
Yes.
And if it's not a good one,
email us instead.
Just email us.
Also, I just want to thank you guys for having me on the
podcast. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it.
Also, check out Fringe Theory. Abby and Kit are so entertaining. They talk cults and they talk conspiracy theories. And we just love them to pieces.
Oh my God.
We love them to bits. I want to kiss them
on the lips.
I can't wait for the day where you, me, Mallory, and Kit can all just hang out. Like in person.
I would love to just be
day.
In a room together.
I know, yeah.
I want to punch all of you in the face.
I'm going to punch you all in the tracheas.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
bye, guys. We love you so, 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 so
much. Why am I waving like you guys can see me?